You know, just remember, it's not always about how successful you are with your speed up. It's about what you are doing to the opponent with your speed up, just by virtue of being a threat to potentially speed the ball up. That will then make them kind of pull off the line and maybe give you some space so that you can hit some more aggressive dinks. Because if you never speed the ball up, you can be sure that your opponent's going to be leaning in, getting ready to attack at any moment. And then they're on offense. They're the ones that feel like they're dictating the point. But if you speed up pretty often, of course, you want to be smart when you do so. But if you are known to speed up, and if you are a threat to speed up, then what that will do is it will make your opponent say, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, if I see them loading up, if I see my own dinks a little high, I might take a step off the line. I might take, you know, 6 inches of space between me and the line to give myself some more time, because you might speed it up. And then when you create that space, you don't have to speed it up, actually. You can just then hit an aggressive dink, and that's how you take control of the kitchen line. Okay, we are back with another episode of my show. So we're just going to get right into it. We're going to have a little bit of a Masters recap. We are also going to have some discussion on, you know what? Let me actually figure out what to do here. Dad, can I record a podcast here? Do I have 10 minutes of quietness? Probably not, right?
Yeah.
You think I would? Okay. Yeah, just try not to talk for like 12 to 15 minutes, and then I'll go to a different room. Okay, sorry. Okay, so... we're going to talk about the Masters, what happened this week at the Masters. Some crazy stuff went down, and one specific shot combination that has been helping me a ton that I kind of figured out on my own at the Masters this past week. So we're going to talk about the shot first, because I think that's what you guys probably care about a little more. And it kind of happened by accident. So we were, you know, the Selkirk Players used the 008 this past weekend. Instead of the paddles we were normally used to using, Selkirk decided to only have the 008 be approved. So we all had to use the 008. And it's a good paddle. You know, we weren't complaining about it, but it was something where we had to kind of make a quick adjustment sort of 2 days before the tournament started. And for me, I am used to playing with the Power Air, and the Power Air has got a little more of like a grab and a little bit of a stickier, so to speak, surface. So I felt really comfortable with my off-the-bounce speed-ups that were, you know, going in, right? Because there's off-the-bounce speed-ups that are going out, but you just try to hit the person, and then there's ones that are deliberately intended to go in. And for me, I'd say about 60% of my off-the-bounce speed-ups are intentionally going in, and the other 40%, I'm just trying to either hit the person or hit it at a high spot, an awkward spot, and it might be going out, and that's fine. But with the 008 paddle, I felt like the grit was a little different, and maybe a little bit I felt like I wasn't getting the same amount of grab. I didn't feel as comfortable with it. It's great in other areas, but in this particular situation with my off-the-bounce speed-ups, I didn't really feel that way. So I decided, okay, well, at the Masters, I'm just going to try to hit everybody with most of my speed-ups. And I'm not going high at the face. I'm not doing what Ben did to Kwong. You know, I'm not going that high, but I'm definitely just, I didn't feel super comfortable keeping my speed-ups in with that type of grit and spin. So I'm just going to go kind of right at the chest. And if they're sailing out, it's okay, because I'm going to kind of go for the body. And I did that pretty often. And you know, Masters went well for us. Rachel and I got to the semifinals. And you know, it was definitely a pretty successful tournament. It's the toughest pickleball competition. And we beat the Johnson siblings in the quarterfinals. That was a really tough one. You know, the Johnson siblings, obviously they're the second best mixed team in the game, and we beat them in straight games, and they played well. I mean, it was one of those things where I don't really remember how we ended up winning. It's such a tough team. It's such a talented team. And I remember at the end feeling a little lucky that we won, actually. And then in the round before that, in the round of 16, we beat Jackie Kawamoto and Jaime Martinez-Vish in straight games as well. And that was another one. I don't really remember too much from these matches. I wish I had a better recap. It was one of those things where you kind of just, you're so in it, you play it, and then at the end you're like, oh, well, we won. But the one thing I really remember, though, back to the topic of this shot combination, is that I wasn't really trying to keep too many of my speed-ups in. It was something where my speed-ups were kind of, I was having a tough time keeping them in, tough time grabbing the ball. And Generally, especially in men's doubles, I found myself just going straight on at the guy in front of me and trying to go for the upper chest area. And then I realized something, that when I was hitting a lot of off-the-bounce speed-ups with my two-handed backhand at the person directly in front of me, every time for the rest of that game, especially if I did it early in the game or early in a match, just speeding it up at the guy in front of me off the bounce, I found that when I would have a two-handed backhand dink off the bounce for the rest of that game, they would start to slide to their right just a little bit in anticipation of that speed up. And you might know this from your own experience. If you're on the right and somebody's speeding up to you often and you want to sit on your backhand side, which most of the top players, especially on the men's side, really on both sides do, you'll start to slide to your right to kind of favor your backhand and give yourself space on the backhand side. So since players are doing that when I'm loading up to hit my two-handed backhand, I found that then, since they're sliding to their right, I had a lot of space to go aggressively dink to the middle. And this is a bit of a more advanced tip, but just remember that if you are speeding it up often to the player in front of you, it's not necessarily about how successful you are with every speed up. You're not going to win all of those hands battles. You're not going to make all of your speed ups. But if you're able to push them off the line and get them thinking so that they're not leaning in and looking to be aggressive, I think that's something that can help a lot. You know, just remember, it's not always about how successful you are with your speed up. It's about what you are doing to the opponent, you know, with your speed up, just by virtue of being a threat to potentially speed the ball up, that will then make them kind of pull off the line and maybe give you some space so that you can hit some more aggressive dinks. Because if you never speed the ball up, you can be sure that your opponent's going to be leaning in, getting ready to attack at any moment. And then they're on offense. They're the ones that feel like they're dictating the point. But if you speed up pretty often, of course, you want to be smart when you do so. But if you are known to speed up and if you are a threat to speed up, then what that will do is it will make your opponent say, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, if I see them loading up, if I see my own dinks a little high, I might take a step off the line. I might take, you know, 6 inches of space between me and the line to give myself some more time because he might speed it up. And then when you create that space, you don't have to speed it up, actually. You can just then hit an aggressive dink, and that's how you take control of the kitchen line.
Selkirk just announced this new product drop, and it might be one of my favorite yet because it's pickleball shoes. Selkirk specifically designed these shoes with pickleball in mind, and there are some really cool features that you need to know about. Both of these shoes have really good support in all directions. Again, you need lateral, horizontal, because you move every single way on the pickleball court. Another feature that they both have is the type of rubber sole that they use. This is meant to grip the court and also last a long time. Both shoes have this mesh top that makes the shoe breathable, and there are two models that you want to know about. The first model is the Court Strike, and the second model is the Court Strike Pro. Now, the difference between the two is this one's probably going to be a little bit lighter weight and a little bit more comfortable, and this one is the performance version of it. It's going to be a little heavier but have more stability. So make sure that you guys check out the Court Strike and the Court Strike Pro at selkirk.com, and if you guys have any questions on either of these models, drop them in the comments below.
Because if you're always on your back foot when you're dinking and your opponent is on their front foot looking to attack, it's almost impossible to take control of the kitchen line. You know, you take control of the kitchen line through taking dinks out of the air, hitting push dinks, so to speak, aggressive dinks that might land an inch behind the kitchen line. And what that does is it does something that, well, I would say this too. If you can attack the ball out of the air and be a threat to attack the ball out of the air, then you can really take control of the kitchen line with your dinking out of the air. Because think about it, if you're playing against me, for example, and I'm at the kitchen line and you're afraid of my backhand out of the air attack. If I get a backhand flick, if it looks like I'm going to take the ball out of the air, and we're dinking back and forth, but then I take one out of the air, you know, and it looks like, oh no, if James can take that dink out of the air and attack it, I'm in a tough spot. I don't want to face his backhand flick. Well, then every time I take that ball out of the air with my backhand, even if I'm not attacking it, you're kind of like this. You're kind of leaning back a little. You're thinking, and the last thing you're thinking of is, okay, I'm going to lean in and be aggressive and attack, get ready to attack James's dink, because he might speed it up. And since I might speed it up, you're thinking less than an offensive mindset. You might be on your back heels. And then that's how I'm able to create space. I have an extra 4 or 5 inches of space to dink to because you're giving me that space. And then that's how I take control of the rally. So that's how you do it. Take a quick sip of coffee. I've actually been flying a lot. Okay, so one other thing that was pretty crazy that happened at this past tournament is Ben Johns decided to take Quang Duong's head off in there, I believe it was the quarterfinal match. A lot of people were talking about it. It got posted everywhere. So Kwong earlier in the match, and he has been known to try to hit people with the ball with his speed ups. He takes a big swing and it's obvious that he's going to try to hit you with the ball, but it's just tough to get out of the way of. You know, if somebody is crushing the ball right at your chest and then you're trying to avoid it, it's not easy to get out of the way when you're 14 feet away from the other person. It's also even more difficult to get out of the way when, you know, for example, Kwong, I think, is probably studying players in terms of how they choose to get out of the way. So for me, for example, if I see somebody's about to hit me with the ball, I tend to lean to my right side and try to, you know, even move to my right or walk to my right and get out of there as fast as I can. So then Kwong might deliberately hit it to my right side when he's trying to hit me. So that's all, you know, part of the fun aspect of pickleball, that is the speed up, you know, sort of chess game that happens. And I'm all for it. But Ben, I'm not sure if he is, because Kwong obviously plays that way. And Ben and Colin were up 11-1 against Matt Wright and Kwong. They're winning in the second game also. It was like a complete blowout. And I would encourage you to go back and watch that match, the quarterfinals of the Masters. And early in the second game, Ben has a forehand, not even that high. He has a little bit of space to do something with it. And he hits the ball harder than I've ever seen anyone hit the ball directly at Kwong's face. Kwong got out of the way, barely, took it like a champ, didn't say anything. And then Ben stared him down after he did it. And Ben's a great guy. I'm not saying that he didn't even, I just want to see what you guys think about that. I wanted you guys to watch that and tell me what you think about this in the comments, because it seems to be happening a lot more often. People are trying to hit each other with the ball. And it's just a simple fact that if you play professionally and it's a good strategy to win, that's something that's going to happen. So it's, you know, I was saying this a year ago that body bags were going to happen more often, and now they're happening often. So that's one thing. Another thing I noticed, it was really windy at the Masters, and people wanted to talk about, you know, how do you hit shots in the wind successfully? How do you sort of avoid the wind or hit the ball through the wind? And I think it's a pretty simple thing, especially this weekend. What I found is the more topspin you hit, the easier it is for that ball to cut through the wind. And the more slice you hit, I found it's just going to float up in the air a little longer. And obviously a slice drop, for example, will be in the air for longer than a topspin drop. So I think it's more, it could be more affected by the wind for that reason. So I found that really putting a lot of topspin on my shots, trying to get a lot of dip on my shots, helps it cut through the air and helps it be in the air for less time, which I think was very helpful for me doing that in the wind. Also moving your feet a little more in the wind, because the ball is more likely to move from left to right in a way that you don't really expect it. So for me, that was big. Just trying to, I mean, it's hard for you to imagine moving my feet more. I don't know if I necessarily did. I would say I tried to move my feet a little earlier, but really being conscious of your own feet in the wind, especially on overheads. You don't want to have your feet fully planted on an overhead for too long if it's really windy, because the ball will be moving and you don't really know what it's going to do. And there is a use case for sometimes letting that ball bounce. If it's a really high lob and it's going to bounce pretty short, you can let it bounce so you have time to then crush it, because it's, again, it's not that hard to put the ball away from this height. If it can get up here or even lower here, you can put that ball away. It doesn't have to be all the way up here. It's not tennis. You can't spike a pickleball. The lower that it bounces, the easier it is in that sense, unless it goes below the shoulder, obviously. So that's all we got for this one. Thank you for watching. And yeah, tune in next time. And let me know what you think about the Ben bag in the comments. I'm curious.